This is True Tales of Luxury with me, Mariella Frostrup. This season of True Tales of Luxury is proudly sponsored by Visa. Visa, everywhere you want to be.
If you put me against, you know, Usain Bolt with this body, I think at the moment he might win if we do the 100 meters, yeah? But if I went and trained, I might stay with him for a bit longer. So physically, I just need to change my structure to keep up. That's all you do when you do mindfulness.
In this series of podcasts, I'm talking to people in the creative industries whose work is bound up with luxury. This week, my guest is someone who you could say deals with people seeking the ultimate luxury, self-knowledge. Terence the teacher is a bit of a guru. Using a combination of mindfulness teaching, neuro-linguistic programming, and clinical hypnotherapy, he teaches people how to help themselves and to help achieve their goals, whether that's changing your whole life or losing some weight. The plaudits from clients would take longer to repeat than the length of this whole podcast, so suffice it to say, he is very good at what he does. And he said that he can immediately see what someone's issues are just by looking at their body, which frankly, Terence, is a bit of a worry for me because I have enough stress on this podcast worrying about what to wear and whether I'm going to look smart enough because usually I'm talking to sort of luxury designers and so on. And now I'm worried that you are looking at me and looking into the real me, and that is not a pretty sight, and I can't disguise it. So do you look at people and start analyzing them straight away?
I do, but can I reframe what you said? So it's not that I see what's wrong, so I just see what they can change. And the body shows you often where people hold on to energies of stress, the past, issues around food, the way that they take care of themselves. It's very easy to just spot those things. And then you can just indicate that to the client and help them to shift.
So you're looking at me now.
Yeah.
What are you seeing?
I'm seeing that you're doing very well.
You see, could you possibly write that down and sign it and I can take it home and show it to my husband?
Okay, I will.
It's interesting that you should be here with us because actually, over the course of the quite a number of podcasts that we've made, when it comes to talking to people about their ultimate luxury, although everyone brings me a little something to show me, most people say time is their ultimate luxury. And I wonder if that is the most constant thing you come up against when you're dealing with issues that people have, that they just don't have the time to take care of themselves.
That's what people say. They say they don't have the time. But then when you actually start talking to them and you simplify and you tell them what needs to be done and how much time they actually need to do that in, then they suddenly realize, actually, I do have time. You know, let's take something like a meditation. You know, the average meditation is taught and people say it's 20 minutes, 40 minutes, 45. And the way that I've studied and the research that I've done into meditation is one breath in and one breath out is a meditation. Because the definition of meditating and mindfulness is focusing in on one thing in the present moment on purpose. So if you take in a deep breath with that thought and you slowly breathe out, you've just done what the definition said. So you've meditated.
That is incredibly encouraging. I think that they're right when they say you're really good at what you do, because the idea that just taking that one breath or even 5 or 10 of them,
it's all you need and it can fit into your life. People always say, but why is your clients the type of clients that you have? And I think it's the way that I simplify, let's say, mental health or spirituality or whatever it is, self-care. It makes it accessible. And then they go, yes, I can do it on the run, you know, on a movie set or in between. So I worked with the Great Ormond Street Hospital staff. You know, in between operating theaters, they have to run from one to another. And sometimes it's 2 minutes, 3 minutes that they have to scrub up. And I've taught them one or two little meditations that takes a minute. They reset themselves and then they're ready for the next operation.
You mentioned, that, you know, a lot of your clients are quite high profile. You know, they're usually at the top of their fields. You have a bit of a reputation for having sort of celebrity clients. And I wondered if that's something that you've gravitated towards or it's happened by accident, or if maybe they have more problems than other people, or maybe they have more time to look at themselves.
My personal observation is that it's for some reason found me. And I don't fully get it, but even, you know, I come from South Africa. I remember in South Africa, one of my first clients was this young girl, and the mom just said, you know, she needs you, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay, I will help her. I was a personal trainer then. She landed up to become Miss Teen South Africa and eventually landed up being Miss South Africa. And it just started from there. And then when I came to the UK, I think within 2 days, I found a client and I didn't really know celebrities. I wasn't really focused on that because of my background. But very quickly, people said, oh, do you know who that is? Do you know who that is? And I think almost it was almost like they liked the fact that I didn't know who they were. I wasn't brought up because of my past in that mindset that, oh, you have to have a celebrity client or someone famous. I was just so happy that people were listening to me and I was making people better. But once that circle trusts you, I think then the doors open.
Let's talk a little bit about that past that you mentioned, because clearly it was instrumental in forming who you are now. I know that your mother was killed by your father in a domestic violence incident when you were just a baby, so you didn't really know either of them.
That's correct.
And that you were brought up in care until you were a teenager, until you were about 16.
Yeah.
So tell me how that experience has shaped you.
Now looking back at it, I realized that I wouldn't change anything that happened to me, because that experience obviously set off the next set of events. And I also had to create this self-preservation feeling or idea. And the idea that I came up with that was that if I just kept on going for one more minute, one more hour, one more day, something will get better. And now when I think about mindfulness as a concept, it's like a full circle that I've come, because I just kept going one more day, one more hour, whatever was presented to me. And my life has turned out to become the most extraordinary journey and experience.
Do you know at what age you started thinking that and where that kind of wisdom came from? Because obviously I think that your period in care was almost as traumatic as you know, your very early babyhood.
I want to say the age of 8, because I remember that I was in a situation, because often I would land up in foster care, different families. And then obviously if they didn't like you enough, then they take you back, etc. But one of the situations wasn't really good. I was forced to walk somewhere to go and buy something. And I remember walking and a car came from the front. And it was just like, I had this choice. And something said, you could just step to the right and then it's all over. Or you step a little bit to the left and protect yourself. And again, the thought comes, it will get better. If you just give it another hour, another day. So I stepped a little bit to the left and just kept walking. So I would say most probably from that age.
So you eventually took responsibility for yourself at about the age of 16, I think,
yep.
And became a personal trainer. Just tell me how that sort of happened.
Well, it flowed out of one sort of part-time job to another. And eventually some person that worked in a bank said to me, do you want to come and work at a bank? We'll teach you how to be a teller. And then one day I was having a coffee, still working for this bank, but knowing that this is not who I am. And this guy came and he said, I'm bringing Gold's Gym to South Africa. It's a very well-known American brand. Will you help me open up this health club? And I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. And I said, yes, and quit the bank. And then one day on the floor in the gym, this guy came called Rich Park, who was an ex-Mr. Universe. And he said to me, I've been watching you training and there's something about you. You look like you understand the human body. I want to teach you my method. And I was like, I'm there. I want to do this.
And yeah. Reg was, he was an 80-year-old.
He was
Mr.
an 80-year-old.
Yes,
he was old. And, you know, I had to help him carry the weights, but he would still carry one of them. And I still looked at him and thought, shouldn't you stay home and, you know, let your wife look after you? But he was working. And he taught me this unbelievable program called Woman on Weights. And that's where my life in the health industry started. And I just knew that's where I belonged.
So why did he teach you women on weights?
It was one of the programs that he taught in America. And because women, in those era was still scared of weights. And we now know that if you retain muscle fiber, the more muscle fiber you carry, the stronger you are. It's good for longevity, for bone density. So he was one of the first that started promoting that.
So you worked as a trainer very successfully in South Africa. And eventually you came to the UK. For what reason?
So just before I came to UK, I did a Pilates course because someone said to me, if you really want to know the human body, go inside, learn about breathing, and teach people to strengthen their core. So I did this training course, came to the UK just to visit a friend. But within 2 days after I landed, someone offered me a position and said, we would like you to work with us. And that's where sort of my future in this country started.
And then you began to be more interested in the mind. Do you know at what moment that happened?
I was sitting on the 22 bus.
Oh, you really do.
I do remember. It was a night bus. I just come back from a club.
So you're not perfect.
I wasn't perfect then, no. And I was young and still, you know, in South Africa, there wasn't those type of clubs. So I really enjoyed it. And this piece of paper flew in. It was still the old type where the doors were open. And it just blew in. And I'm a Virgo. I'm a clean. Things have to be clean. So I thought, I'll just pick it up. So I picked up this piece of paper. And when I looked at it, it said, do you want to change people from the inside out? Do you want to get to the core of people's problems? Learn to hypnotize people. And I was like, I want to do this. This is what I want to do. I think 2 weeks later, I was doing an introduction course into clinical hypnosis. And after that introduction course, they invited me to do the diploma training, which was part-time over 2 years. And yeah, loved it. Never looked back.
Tell me a bit about clinical hypnosis, because of course, you know, hypnotists get a bad rap sometimes. You know, there are a lot of charlatans out there. It's hard to know when you go and see someone who's going to hypnotize you, whether you can trust them, whether it's something that's going to have a positive impact or not. Tell me a little bit about how it works as far as...
There's a big difference between stage hypnosis and then clinical hypnotherapy. Mm-hmm. So first of all, obviously in the training, you get that same training that a normal therapist would get with, you know, all the backing and the academical stuff that goes with it. But all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. Don't be fooled. I cannot do anything with you if you don't allow me to. So before I can even get you into a relaxed state, because a trance is just a relaxed state, I need your permission. Now, when we're talking like we are talking, yeah, we work in high beta. When you relax, you go to alpha. And then you go to theta, and then you go to delta. And all a hypnotherapist does is I take you from beta to alpha. And if I'm very good, I can take you to theta. It's the same that you go into when you fall asleep at night. It's the same when you wake up in the morning and you awake, but you still can't move your body. So it's a natural state.
And if you are really good and you get someone to theta, what can you? Why does that make you really good? And what does it do, let's say, for me?
Well, what happens is that when you want to work with someone, and especially if you want to work with core issues that they've struggled with, and I often find that people come to me almost as a last resort, so they've tried every other therapy or therapist, sometimes they will consciously fight what you say or they'll fight the change. When you take someone to theta, some of that conscious awareness is not present, so you almost get access to the subconscious. And then when you get access to the subconscious, you can share this new way of being without being resisted. Now, obviously, depending on where they're at, it will take some time. It might take some extra sessions. We call it compounding of suggestions before it takes. But it's about just getting past that conscious. There's something around the subconscious they call the critical factor. Now, your subconscious is 95% of who you are. It runs you, everything. And most of your reactions are subconscious. Someone says, I love you. And one person will go, oh, thank you. Another person runs away, subconscious, because of their past, something that happened. So it all sits there. And the critical factor will not make you or allow you to change if you don't want to. When I take you to theta, the critical factor actually opens up. It relaxes. And what will happen is that when the subconscious hears something that really makes sense for you and that feels right, it will grab onto it. And that's why people come to me, you know, like for smoking cessation. And you share with them in an hour that they choose to be free of an addiction. And it brings them health and longevity. And they see their skin improve. So you share all these new ways that it will just improve their lives. And eventually, when they get up, they're like, oh, yeah, that's what I want. And most of the time, 99.9%, they walk away a non-smoker.
But you didn't stop at clinical hypnosis.
No, of course not.
Once you'd kind of opened that window, you decided to take it further and you moved into the area of mindfulness, which, I mean, I don't think anyone had heard of 3 or 4 years ago, but now, you know, is very much, you know, a sort of zeitgeist pursuit. I had a professor at Oxford talking about the mindfulness department at Oxford the other day. It was at an event. And it was fascinating to hear them talking about how much progress they were making and how much progress mindfulness can make, particularly with people with mental disorders. But what nobody talked about at this session and what interested me is why so many people are suffering from mental disorders. It feels like there's been a complete epidemic.
Yeah, so mindfulness found me just like hypnosis found me. So in 2014, I had two heart attacks, cardiac arrest. So my heart stopped for 20 minutes, came back, and then after a few minutes, another one for 10 minutes.
And you were young, you were 46 years old?
Yes, yeah. It sort of stopped me in my tracks because I was healing people, I was changing people's lives. But I think I forgot about number one, which was looking after myself. And after the event, which I call my rebirth, I was sent home. And, you know, there wasn't clarity if I would survive, how I would survive, would I have brain damage, you know, because 20 minutes is quite a long time. And I was sitting at home on my couch and I knew something had to change. And then someone said to me, have you heard of mindfulness? And I said, is that got to do with meditation? And they're like, yes. I was like, sorry, can't do it. It's not for me. It's boring. Don't even go there. And they said, no. Just hear us out. But he said, just come with me. See this woman. She will teach you. And this woman did this one breath in, one breath out with me that I shared with you. And it grabbed me. And I thought, I want to know more. And in the first few months, I just breathed in and out for 1 minute. And that was my meditation. I used to joke with my friends, would go out and we would do something. I said, oh, sorry, I forgot to meditate. Hold on. Turn my back to them, take in a breath, blow it out and go, there we go, I've meditated, let's go on. But as a clinical hypnotherapist, I knew that how do we learn? We learn through repetition, and that is how a habit is recreated. So I was repeating my breath as a mindfulness action, as a meditation. So my brain started picking up, oh, he's a meditator. So before long, I naturally just would say to people, I meditate. And then it was easy to do 2, 3, 5, 10, and now whatever time I do. But then I had to look in why. What was this doing? And the science behind it shows, and this is the important part, that mindfulness meditation changes your brain physiologically, physically. The structure of the brain changes. And it's in that changes that you change. Now, why is there so many people with mental health issues? Is because the brain's adapted. We live in this, I would say, in some of the safest times ever. But our genetics is still hunter-gatherer. So one of the parts of the brain that's really active is the amygdala, which is our flight and fright. You know, you've got to either fight or you get away. But there's not that much happening anymore that we have to get away from. So the amygdala had to adapt. So it went, I will find something to stress about. And guess what it found? Instagram, Facebook, emails, our lifestyles, the fact that I missed a cab, the fact that I don't get to work. Oh, it's not a lion chasing me. It's something to stress about. There's a part of the brain called the insula, which has got to do with how we relate to people and how we connect to people. There's a feeling of belonging that it creates. And most people sit with an underactive insula because of how our brain, some parts of the brain overworks. And then what they find when you do mindfulness, things start shifting. The amygdala shrinks, still works, but it shrinks. Prefrontal cortex lights up. Insula increases in size. And you know, people that are depressed, which, you know, and they, you know, because insula, they feel that no one loves them. They feel alone. But it's because the insula is so small. You do some meditation with them or mindfulness with them for a certain amount of time. And you can see that part of the brain lighting up on an MRI scan. And suddenly they go, yeah, I can think that someone loves me. Yeah, I feel that I'm part of something. I made a joke yesterday. It's like, if you put me against, you know, Usain Bolt with this body, I think at the moment he might win if we do the 100 meters, yeah? But if I went and trained, I might stay with him for a bit longer. So physically, I just need to change my structure to keep up. That's all you do when you do mindfulness. You're changing yourself for the better, and then, you know, the world's your oyster.
And how much have you had to work on yourself before you turned your attention to becoming the teacher? Because I can only imagine that with the past that you lived through, you came with an enormous truckload full of baggage, you know, that you've been hauling with you for a large part of your life. So how much did you have to sort of self-heal before you could move on?
I had to self-heal from day one. I'm still self-healing. This is a continuous journey. Don't be fooled that we get there. We never get there. This is an experience that's continuous and that keeps going. It took me about 2 years when I felt a shift and an awareness awakening in me where I went, I'm now ready to share this because I feel that it's changed me. It's opened me up to what I am, who I am, what this life is about, and now I want to share it.
And none of the tools that you've given people are unique and original, but clearly how you apply them is unique because you're incredibly popular and people talk about it. I mean, Christiane Louboutin, the shoe designer, is a huge kind of disciple, if I might even use that word, and just talks about you turning around his life and so on. So what is it, do you think, that you do particularly that other people don't? Because, like as I said, mindfulness, you can go anywhere around the corner and there'll be someone teaching mindfulness or a mindfulness class. Or
I think it's the ability that when you sit with someone and, you know, whatever their name is or not, to say to them, it's okay that you're not perfect. It's okay that you have issues. It's okay that, you know, you want to change. Because sometimes when people are of a certain stature, people expect them just to have it all. And they're not allowed to be sad. They're not allowed to be depressed. They're not allowed to want more or something different. And I think with me, it's that non-judgment. First of all, I've been there, got the t-shirt, done a lot of stuff. But I come from a past where none of that matters because we are all on this journey together. It doesn't matter what you've done. It's where we're going. We are not physiologically meant to be internally happy. You hear it from me today for the first time. Anyone ever said this to you? There is no, this is the secret to happiness. In our psyche, in our physiological structure, there has to be a discontent because that's what keeps us moving. They did the test with mice where they release a certain amount of dopamine and biochemistry that is equal to when we feel bliss and happy. And guess what happened to the mice? They stopped eating. They stopped moving, they stopped reprocreating because they weren't bliss.
You consult here at Harrods, I know. I wondered where your ambitions lie because obviously you are a near perfect human being, centered, mindful, calm, Pilates ridden.
Who are you talking about?
So with all of those incredible qualities, where do you get the, you are almost happy, dare I say it. Now, where do you get the driving impulse and what is it, what are you driven by? I mean, you're about to change your passport to Terence the teacher. So you clearly take it very seriously.
Yeah. I think what drives me is I want to help as many people as possible. That's my goal. I do feel content. You're right. I feel very content in my life. I feel grateful. I've got compassion for people. I've got appreciation for everything now. But people need guidance sometimes. They need someone just to say, oh, it's not that difficult if you just try this. You know, and I remember when I did my course in hypnosis, actually, the woman said to me, you're not going to always, you know, change everyone. But if someone walks away from you even 1% better, you've achieved. And that's what I'm trying to do now.
And how much do you think that your desire to help other people is driven still by a sort of primal urge because you weren't able to help your mum?
She obviously made the decision to protect me because that attack was actually against me, but she took the brunt of it. And so I want to make sure that I survived for a good reason.
You said you want to help as many people as possible, and I'm sure your diary is completely crammed and there's probably waiting lists for your salon at Harrods here. And so is there a way that you can export some of what you're talking about and it still have value for people who don't have the luxury of sitting with you?
Yeah, so I also recently brought out an app. Now, the app I originally created for the Great Ormond Street Hospital staff, but it is actually a chatbot. So it runs through Facebook Messenger, and it's called www.breathewithterence.com. And when you open it, you can get it from my website or just put in that link. It opens up in Messenger, and I actually come and chat to you, and I will go, hi there, how are you doing today? Have you breathed yet? And I'll take you through a conversation, but in the app, it's 21 days that are free. You are actually taught the habit of being mindful because I check in with you. You create the time to be mindful, and I teach you meditations from 45 seconds to 20 minutes. And then at the end, you have this library. If you want to continue, obviously, you can continue on the journey. But the first 21 days sets you up with learning the habit and easy meditations that you can do.
I'm probably very typical because on my phone, I must have about four apps. Calm, Mindful. There's one called Breathe, maybe, you know, so you can see what I might think I'm in pursuit of. And I can honestly say I've opened one of them once and the others not at all. What do you think are the sort of three simple basic things that all of us could do that would impact on our lives in the positive way that we're all desperately pursuing but failing to find?
Well, let's go back to the definition of mindfulness. Focusing in on one thing in the present moment on purpose. Once a day, just check in with your breath. Go, oh, where's my breath? Is it fast? Is it slow? Deep, shallow? Where do I feel myself breathing? Because your breath is a very good indicator of your mood as well. And that you can do anywhere, you know, running in between meetings, in between podcasts, in between clients. But it resets yourself. But it is a meditation. And the next thing you can do is if you sit focusing on a sound on purpose in the present moment, just for a second, listen.
I'd rather not because I can hear people stomping around the store.
So let's not. But you can use a sound. The next thing you can do is choose a meal. Focus in on your meal. Choose your breakfast, choose your lunch, and just go, for the next 10 minutes, I will be with my meal. And you just taste the food. Look at the colors of the food. Chew the food. How does it taste? Which part of the mouth do you taste it the most? And it's just that focusing in. And what it does, it immediately slows down the brainwave. And it takes you to alpha state. Because you also do go into it quite naturally during the day when you drive, when you're on the tube, on a bus. So it's much more simpler than what we think. But I think people need to know that it's much more simpler.
I said to you that a lot of the people, you know, sort of high flyers that we interview for this podcast say that their ultimate luxury is time, and that time seems to be of value to them because that's time for them. I wondered what for you is the ultimate luxury?
Spending time with people, love being with people, and when I can share. Whenever I have the opportunity, it feels like the biggest gift to me. So I would say that's my luxury.
And do you not get disappointed by people?
No, because there's no expectancy. Because we don't have to be any way. You can just be yourself. There's no right or wrong. There's no good or bad. There just is. The way you present yourself, the way you are. And together, we're just trying to improve, to get better, to get there together, to do it a bit different. We're not meant to be perfect. So when people are in a certain way that might make me uncomfortable, I see it for what it is. That's where they are. That's their journey. And I suppose if it's a little bit too much, I can just remove myself, go back to my couch and meditate for 2 hours, you know, but we are all supposed to be what we are. So I can't judge that.
Now, I know you've also brought me a luxury item because you are still, you know, not quite a saint and you might have other impulses that aren't necessarily just purely empathetic. So what have you brought? Or maybe you're going to bring something that's going to save mankind and prove me to be a cynical old witch.
That's precisely what I was going to do. My ultimate luxury is something that was given or is still being given to me by someone that I ultimately respect and I'm very close to. And it's a pair of trainers. And they're in my bag.
Dun, dun, dun. I love this revelation moment. I'm already guessing who it's by because the bag says very clearly Christian Louboutin, which is the bag that every woman I know wants to see, you know, dangled by her partner or significant other when her birthday arrives. But this is a pair of male trainers. Very nice.
So these are Christian Louboutin trainers. I'm actually wearing a similar pair. Those are, I think, a snakeskin.
They're quite bling, the ones.
They're quite bling.
He's wearing a snakeskin pair with like gold. What are those bits called? The laces come through.
Yeah, I don't know what.
So they've got gold piping and gold eyelets.
But what you're going to notice?
Very gangster rap, if you don't mind me saying.
But what you're going to notice is that they both look the same. So the pair that I brought plus the pair I'm wearing, and these are called Terrence.
Oh, you've got your own shoe.
And Christian made them for me as a thank you, long time ago. But what he did is when he made them originally, they were also available for people to buy. So those pair you could have bought whatever season they were in. But this Christmas, he made a pair that no one else can buy, which was just this calfskin and it's calf leather and it's white just for me. But they called it Terence's. And I think for me, this is my ultimate luxury. As a kid growing up that couldn't even afford shoes, to have a shoe in my own name, I mean, what else can you ask for?
Well, I wonder if finally I let you run around Harrods and see what else you could ask for, where you'd head. I did go into the techno gym today. That was quite startling. They've got things in there that, frankly, look like you could do very painful things to your body with.
So can I shock you? You know where I would go first? The food hall. And I would go to the salad bar. It's the most amazing fresh foods. And you can choose whatever you want. All the different types of leaves and salads and olive oil. It's extraordinary. And you just build up your own little healthy lunch or dinner, whatever you can do. So that's the first place I would go. Definitely.
So you'd pop down there in your Le Boutins.
Totally.
And pick up a nice salad.
And wonderful fresh salad from Harrods Food Court, yes.
Darren's the teacher. You actually might be perfect.
I don't think so, but thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to True Tales of Luxury with me, Mariella Frostrup, and my guest, Terence the Teacher. Next week, I'll be talking to the designer Hannah Coffin, creator of the ultra-feminine, vintage-inspired womenswear brand Needle & Thread. This series is recorded in Harrods in London. Thank you to our sponsor, Visa. Visa, everywhere you want to be.